Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Team USA, champions in the pool and on the pitch. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
The CDC is saying the war has changed in this pandemic.
The Delta variant, as contagious as chickenpox. Vaccinated or unvaccinated, you have it, you spread it. Are we putting up enough of a fight? A major crash sidelines Team USA in BMX racing.
Big accident on the outside of the pileup!
And Simone Biles gives an update on her case of the twisties. Highlights from Tokyo as we wrap up week one of the games. They worked at the side of soldiers and American diplomats for 20 years. Now the first group of Afghan nationals arrives in the U.S. Our next steps to thank them for their service. New evidence. The former president wanted top Justice Department personnel to declare the 2020 election corrupt. Handwritten notes from top officials. Facebook diving into the metaverse. Eviction moratorium set to expire. And Prince predicted the future.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. The Olympic cauldron burning over Tokyo as we wrap up the first week of competition. And what a week it's been. Huge wins in the pool for Ledecky, Dressel, and Fink. Simone Biles out. Suni Lee steps up. A gold medal first in fencing. And women's soccer stays alive. We have highlights from Tokyo. And we catch up with the former gymnast and silver medalist Blaine Wilson. He tees up our primetime coverage. The men's gymnastics trampoline finals, plus women's beach and indoor volleyball, all here tonight on CNBC. Topping the news, an alarming new report from the CDC. The agency now acknowledges the war against COVID has changed. That from an internal presentation that lays bare a broader, more grim picture of COVID Delta. Here are the key takeaways. Vaccinated people can spread Delta just as easily as the unvaccinated. The variant is equally contagious as chickenpox and more transmissible than flu, the common cold, even Ebola. Data also shows COVID Delta may actually cause more severe disease compared to other COVID strains. Right now, more than 36,000 Americans are in hospitals sick with COVID. That's almost exactly the same number as this time last year. As you can see, deaths were much higher back then, but that was before vaccines and before COVID Delta. The Surgeon General spoke with CNBC today about the new CDC document and the dangers of Delta.
It's why cases have more than quadrupled in recent weeks and why Delta now makes up the vast majority of COVID infections in our country. You put all of this together and it paints a picture of a very aggressive virus and one that we've got to be especially cautious with.
Earlier this week, the CDC reversed its mask guidance and told many fully vaccinated Americans to once again put on masks indoors. But this internal report hints the new recommendation may not go far enough. CDC officials wrote, universal masking is essential to reduce the transmission of the Delta variant. We have coverage from all angles tonight. Valerie Castro live on Broadway, where masks are also coming back. We'll also hear from a doctor who warned the CDC about the rising numbers of breakthrough cases. First, our health and science correspondent, Meg Terrell. Meg, even though vaccinated people can still spread the virus, Delta shows vaccines are still keeping people from getting gravely ill.
That's right. The data do show that the CDC's presentation was alarming in many ways, but it also reinforced that the vaccines are very protective against severe disease. Now, the agency estimates people who are fully vaccinated have a 25-fold reduction in the risk of hospitalization and death from COVID compared with people who are unvaccinated. For getting COVID at all, the risk is 8-fold lower if you're vaccinated. But cases in vaccinated people do happen. The CDC estimates about 35,000 per week among 162 million people in the U.S. who are vaccinated. Now, the agency released a case study today on the major outbreak we've been hearing about in Provincetown, Massachusetts, that began around July 4th, where among 469 cases in Massachusetts, 74% were fully vaccinated. We spoke with a young man who came down with COVID after visiting.
I work out 5 or 6 days a week, and I was truly off my feet for 6 out of the past 11 days, which was shocking to me and surprising.
Now, he said he was fully vaccinated and believes if he hadn't been, he'd have had to get medical care. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky saying the findings from Provincetown were a pivotal reason behind the updated mask guidance this week, that even fully vaccinated people, if infected, can carry high viral loads and potentially be contagious. But that report concluding perhaps the guidance didn't go far enough, suggesting that even areas without substantial or high transmission might consider expanding their prevention strategies, including masking in indoor settings regardless of vaccination status. And Shep, a lot of people are raising questions about whether we're going to start seeing stronger measures from the federal government. And in fact, Dr. Walensky was just asked about this on Fox News tonight, whether they're considering mandating the vaccine on a federal level. She said, quote, "That's something that I think the administration is looking into." Shep, that's a reversal from what we've been hearing from the administration. In fact, just from a White House spokesperson today who said that is not on the table. So we'll wait to see if that's really a change or maybe a misspeaking. Shep?
We'll see. I bet we learn soon. Meg, thank you. Let's turn to Dr. Michael Levasseur now, epidemiologist, assistant professor at Drexel University. It was his research that alerted the CDC to that Provincetown cluster and the dangers of the Delta variant. Doctor, thanks so much. You've been studying and modeling COVID cases for a year now. Why did this particular finding convince you that you had to reach out?
Well, it was a couple of things, it's not just me working on this. I have a collaborator that I've been working with very closely named Michael Donnelly, who also is very involved in this research. And what we saw was there were a lot of people that we knew through social media who had attended these events during those weekends, and it was just a large cluster of individuals, specifically people who were staying in the same vacation home during that week. So large cases of entire households who were becoming infected. And so it was really sort of that information that set us to start asking questions and trying to gather as much information as possible. And at some point we realized we just needed to bring this to the next level and reached out to local health departments and CDC.
And thankfully you did. What are the risk points, Dr. Levasseur, the risk points that you're watching and are concerned about when it comes to the spread of this Delta variant?
So in particular with this cluster, the thing that I think was most surprising to us was the large number of symptomatic disease. And thankfully, there weren't a whole lot of people who wound up being hospitalized in this cluster. But there were people who said, you know, for example, that this infection based on, you know, all the infections that they've had in their life was like an 8 out of 10, like the young man that you just had speaking before. It's a really powerful illness that people are getting. It's not something that anyone, you know, really wants. So identifying that there was, you know, substantial amount of illness in this population was one of those things that tipped us off. But also the fact that it was going through households and entire, you know, groups of friends who stayed together was one of the things that we identified.
You know, Doctor, at this point, it seems pretty clear that this country will never fully wear a mask or be fully vaccinated against COVID. So what do we do? What happens now?
Well, I mean, we just need to encourage people to do the right thing. I think what we've seen over the course of the past few weeks is that places that have had lower vaccination rates, as cases increase, people become a little more convinced that maybe, you know, they need to go out and get this vaccine. Some people are waiting until there's full FDA approval. We may have that for the mRNA vaccines by the end of the month, hopefully. And I think that those are all things that are going to be really helpful. But I think this is going to come down to people, you know, really, you know, gritting down and realizing that we need to work together to get out of this. It's the only way we can get out of it.
But before we quit, for the millions who've done the right thing and gotten the vaccine, you know, they were kind of promised being close to the end of the pandemic. Do you ever see a time where we don't have this virus at all?
It's not likely. The efforts that we need to do to make sure that the, you know, a large enough proportion of the globe gets vaccinated to really eradicate this virus is just going to be monumental. And we've done it before with other diseases. I'm not saying it's outside of the realm of possibility. I'm just not sure that there's necessarily the political will to go in that direction at this point.
Dr. Michael Levasseur, thank you. And as Delta variant spreads across the nation, governors and mayors are divided over mandating masks. Today, the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, issued an executive order banning every local school district from requiring face masks and threatening to pull their funds if they make kids mask up. He says parents can decide for themselves whether their kids wear them or not. But in L.A. County, the nation's second largest school district, they're not just requiring masks, but making students and staff get tested weekly, regardless of vaccination status. Politicians, schools, and businesses all taking different approaches when it comes to mandates, and Broadway's no exception. CNBC's Valerie Castro is on The Great White Way tonight. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Shep. Well, Broadway has been shut down since the pandemic began, and the reopening of theaters like the August Wilson behind me is highly anticipated. But when the doors finally open again for a new season in just a few weeks, there will be new restrictions in place for everyone who walks through those doors. The Broadway League represents the owners and operators of 41 theaters on Broadway and says proof of vaccination against COVID-19 will be required for all performers, backstage crew, theater staff, and audience members. Masks will also be required for the audience, except when eating and drinking. Children under 12 who won't be eligible for vaccines just yet will be required to show proof of a negative COVID test. There will be some exceptions for religious reasons and medical conditions. The president of the Broadway League says she has no concerns that this will turn people away, and in fact, she thinks it will do the opposite.
What I've been hearing all day long is how many people will now come that weren't coming because we didn't have this policy. We don't want to make any of our audiences unhappy, but we've said from day one and continue to say the safety of our cast, crew, and audience is paramount.
Broadway coming back to life also means a return to work for so many performers and musicians who have had to find other work in the meantime. Victoria Patterson is a violinist who's been in the orchestra for shows like Moulin Rouge and Phantom of the Opera, and she says she can't wait to play for a packed house.
I've been playing on mountaintops, outside, piers, but we can't play outside forever. And we need to be in these amazing theaters. New York is such an amazing space, these incredible halls. So let's do it safely. I think it's great.
The Broadway League says these mandates will be in place until at least October 31st, but could review that decision before then. Other venues here in the city, like Carnegie Hall and the Metropolitan Opera, they're adopting similar restrictions, but taking it a step further and saying children under 12 just won't be allowed at those venues. Here in the city, Mayor Bill de Blasio says he plans to announce new plans for mask rules sometime next week. Shep.
Can't wait to get back to the theater. Valerie, thanks so much. Tokyo 2020 and a check on the medal board as Ledecky and Dressel prepare to swim for gold yet again. And Simone Biles takes to Instagram to update fans on her battle with the Twisties. We're live in Japan with highlights from the games. A win for women's soccer on and off the pitch. Advancing in Tokyo and in the courtroom. The big assist in their fight for equal pay, and their ex-husbands are two of the biggest names in business. Now Mackenzie Scott and Melinda French Gates team up on a multi-million dollar project of their own.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course. Get the limited-time offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
Tokyo 2020 and a big win for Team USA, the women's soccer team. Did you see that this morning? They kept their hopes alive for gold after a really dramatic penalty shootout against the Netherlands in the quarters. Today, the goalkeeper, Alyssa Nayer, pulled off two clutch saves before Megan Rapinoe stepped up to seal the deal. The win brings the women's team one step closer to a historic achievement. They aim to become the first reigning World Cup champs to win gold at the Games. Team USA will now face Canada in the semis on Monday. So here's where the medal count stands right now. Team USA leads with a total of 41. China's next with 40, but with the most golds. And the Russian Olympic Committee with 34. NBC's Tom Yamas live in Tokyo. What a win for Team USA, Tom.
Yeah, Shep, what a great game. It's always wonderful when it goes to a shootout like that. And how about Team USA's goalie? You mentioned Alyssa Nayer. I mean, just having an incredible game. Megan Rapinoe later saying that that goalie was, quote, immense, and she was. But as you mentioned, this is a historical run right now for Team USA's women's soccer team. But the big question that's outstanding is what's going to happen as we enter the semifinals? We know that Team USA is going to face off against Canada on Monday. But Sweden, that team that beat them 3-0 and gave them so much trouble at the beginning of the Olympics, is also still in the final rounds. We're going to have to see what happens there. We're also monitoring some news from BMX racing. Connor Fields, who's the reigning gold medal champion, had an absolutely horrific crash on the course here in Tokyo, Shep. It was a reminder what these athletes and these Olympians go through and what they put their bodies through. He had to be taken from the track on a stretcher to a hospital. U.S. Olympic officials tell us that he is awake and they're now evaluating him. We'll stay on top of that news throughout these Olympics. And then finally, Novak Djokovic. This was a stunner in tennis. He was on his way to a golden slam. That's when you win a grand slam plus a gold medal, but he got knocked out yesterday. Really upsetting for a lot of tennis fans who were hoping they'd see that historical run. A man has never done a golden slam, so Novak is done in the Olympics, but there's still a lot of Olympics left, Shep.
We're still not sure whether Simone Biles will compete again in Tokyo. What's the latest?
Yeah, you know, Shep, we have some new reporting for you tonight on this. So first, Simone Biles put some videos up on Instagram, which she later deleted, but they showed an athlete who's clearly trying to come back but is struggling big time. The video showed her on the uneven bars, going through her routines, but unable to finish them and falling on her back. She was talking about the twisties, as you mentioned, and I can't imagine what that's like, trying to flip in the air and not knowing what's up and down. But the new reporting we have is that Michaela Skinner, who was also on Team USA, has been asked to stay in Japan and possibly replace Simone Biles on the vault, which is set for Sunday. We'll know for sure in about a day, but still unclear what happens to Simone in the Tokyo Games.
All right. Thanks very much, Tom Yamas. Japan expanding a state of emergency to several cities in and around Tokyo after that record-breaking surge in COVID infections. Here are the cities. Emergency measures already in place in Tokyo and in the southern island of Okinawa now extended until the end of next month. Yesterday, the country logged more than 10,000 new cases for the first time during the pandemic. And in Tokyo, the seven-day rolling average surged by more than 80% over just the past week. Today, Japan's prime minister insisted the Tokyo Olympics have nothing to do with the rise in infections, but he urged people watch the games from home. The U.S. women's team should have been making more money than the men. That's the word in court today from the men. They say they're backing the women in their fight for equal pay. In a searing court filing, the men's team wrote, "The Federation has treated the women's national team players as second-class citizens, discriminating against the women in their wages and working conditions and paying them less than the men's national team players, even as U.S. soccer's enjoyed a period of extraordinary financial growth." The filing, part of an appeal by the women's team players. A judge threw out their claim last year, saying they'd agreed to a different pay structure than the men. The women's team is much more successful than the men's, winning four World Cups and four Olympic gold medals since 1991. The men haven't won any since then. But Washington Post analysis found in 2019, a player on the women's team earned about 89 cents for every dollar that a player on the men's team earned. The search is over and the final victim buried. Now, a new question hangs over Surfside, Florida. Who will buy the site of that deadly condo collapse? And what will they build? One family who had four loved ones die tells us what they don't want to see. And tornadoes ripping through the Northeast. Damage so severe, one official says it looks like a bomb went off.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Go to cnbcmakeit.com/courses to register now and learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course, where experts share their secrets for a dynamic resume, coming across with confidence, what to wear, and more. For a limited time, save 50% with our introductory offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
The search for victims in the Surfside condo collapse has ended, but the battle over what happens to that property is just beginning. A judge in Florida approved the sale with the money to go to the victims and their families. But now the question is, what will rise in its place? Another condo building or a memorial? NBC's Allison Barber spoke with members of the Langesfeld and Rodin families whose loved ones died in the collapse. They were all related by blood or marriage. Nikki and her husband Luis and his cousins Moises and Andreas, all of them younger than 30. And now their family members weigh in on what they'd like to happen.
The trauma that this caused me doesn't let me remember her smile. It goes through thinking that she was screaming, realizing that maybe she was dying. And I know that if this happened to me, she will be sitting here talking about me because she believed that she can do something for me, and I would do the same for her.
Have you been able to go back towards, get close to the site or anything like that?
Yeah. It's painful. You just wish you were in a dream sometimes.
Do you feel like this memorial, if one is made permanent, it could help you heal just a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't think it'll help me heal, but I think it will allow me to go there and remember them and honor them. If I have to drive past and just see another tower, it's going to be so painful for all of us.
The families we spoke to, they know this property has to be sold. What they are hoping is that someone, the government, be it federal, state, local, or a combination therein, someone steps in and buys this property and will then turn it into a public permanent memorial. Shep.
Allison, thank you. Destructive tornadoes slamming parts of the East Coast overnight. This is the scene over Toms River, New Jersey. A twister ripping the roofs off homes, throwing debris into the air and tearing trees right out of the ground. Officials there say three likely touched down in the state. This used to be a car dealership in Bucks County, PA. Officials say two tornadoes touched down there, leaving a trail of destruction and injuring five people. Twisters also knocking down trees in parts of Maryland and Northern Virginia. People there reporting hail the size of limes. And in Kentucky, flash flooding killed one woman inside a mobile home after the storm knocked it off its foundation. Officials said within an hour, parts of the area were flooded by up to 6 feet of water. When things started opening back up after COVID, or during COVID, I should say, restaurant owners struggled to find workers. Now that the numbers of COVID cases is spiking, we check in to see if the worker problem's getting better or worse. After years of waiting, Afghan nationals arrive in the U.S., escaping the threat of the Taliban after serving alongside the U.S. military for decades. But there's still work to do. We talk next steps. And new handwritten notes reveal President Trump urged the Justice Department to question the 2020 election. How the DOJ responded as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. The pandemic has taken a toll on businesses across the country, but bars and restaurants have been really hard hit. Many closed, at least temporarily, some closed for good. Over the past year, we've been following the restaurant industry on its road to recovery, and now some owners tell us their biggest challenge is still finding workers. Here's CNBC's Kate Rogers.
Business is booming at Bubba's Roadhouse and Saloon in Cape Coral, Florida. But staring down consumer demand and an ongoing lack of available workers, owner Jay Johnson has had to take things into his own hands, literally. Johnson is now cooking on the line 7 days a week in the toughest hiring environment he's seen in years.
It's difficult to get people to apply. Once they do apply, it's difficult to get them to show up for an interview. I'd say that of the interviews that we set up, more than half of them don't even show up for the interview. And then once they do show up for the interview, if we decide to hire them, again, it's a 50-50 shot if they show up for their first day of work.
Across the country in San Francisco, Rene Dennis is facing the same issue. His new restaurant, Chow Pascal, opened in June. But he's operating under limited hours and is closed on Sundays because his staff of 11 isn't enough to meet demand, and he's fearful of burning them out.
If we had a full staff, we'd be open 7 days a week. I would expand my hours. We're doing our last heating at 8 o'clock right now. We would probably go back to what we were doing in the past, which is more like 10:30, and really pushing for that bar crowd. But you know, I really don't have the manpower to do it without overworking people.
Owners point to unemployment benefits, COVID fears, and workers leaving the industry over the last year to pursue new careers as potential reasons for the shortage. But the worker crunch is being felt beyond the restaurant industry and at businesses large and small. The National Federation of Independent Business said 46% of owners have openings they can't fill right now. And beyond the labor crunch, restaurants are facing another hurdle, deciding how to handle vaccinations for indoor dining. A coalition of bar owners in San Francisco just decided to recommend proof of vaccinations for indoor attendance here. And restaurateur Danny Meyer said he will be imposing that rule at his restaurants moving ahead. Likely more to follow. Chef?
Kate, thanks. Have a Tesla? Get a check. That's what's topping CNBC on the money. Owners of about 1,700 Tesla Model S sedans could get $625 as the company agrees to the proposed settlement of a class action lawsuit. According to documents obtained by CNBC, Tesla agrees to pay about $1.5 million total to the lawyers and the owners of cars that got a software update that reduced their battery's charging speed, maximum capacity, and range. The update downloaded in May of 2019, a hearing to finalize that settlement scheduled for December. A massive meat recall. Almost 300,000 pounds of raw beef products recalled because they may be contaminated with E. coli. The meat came from Greater Omaha Packing, then distributed to processors in Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Plus a big donation to aid gender equality. Mackenzie Scott and Melinda French Gates teaming up to give $40 million to four foundations. Each focuses on advancing gender equality in tech, higher education, minority communities, and caregiving. On Wall Street, the Dow down 149, the S&P down 24, the NASDAQ down 106. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
When the pandemic closed the pools, Olympic swimmers needed a place to train. That's when one California man says two of the biggest names in the game came a-knocking. The Black Friday rush could be extra frantic this year. Toy makers raised the alarm about a supply shortage and a price hike. Plus, new evidence about the former president's push to label the 2020 election a fraud.
Handwritten notes show President Trump urged the Justice Department to declare the election was corrupt as he desperately tried to overturn his loss. On December the 27th, there was a phone call between President Trump and the acting attorney general and his deputy. According to notes taken by that deputy, they told Mr. Trump, understand that the DOJ can't and won't snap its fingers and change the outcome of the election. Doesn't work that way. And Mr. Trump responded, just say that the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the our councilman. During the call, the DOJ officials repeatedly told Mr. Trump that his allegations of widespread voter fraud were flat out false and not supported by the evidence. Notably, this phone call came just days before pro-Trump supporters stormed the Capitol on January the 6th and attempted to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's victory. Here's NBC's Pete Williams.
Shep, this disclosure adds some new detail about just how hard President Trump was leaning on the Justice Department to back up his claims of election fraud. What we saw today, what you quoted from, are notes of a phone call that President Trump made 2 days after Christmas to the top two Justice Department officials who were in charge after the Attorney General William Barr stepped down. The notes were taken by Richard Donahue, who was acting as Deputy Attorney General. They say that he and Jeffrey Rosen, who was the acting Attorney General, told the president that the Justice Department extensively investigated the claims of election fraud and found them to be groundless. At one point, Rosen told the president, quote, "Much of the information you're getting is false." These notes were turned over to the House Oversight Committee, which released them today. The Justice Department usually doesn't do this. It usually resists congressional demands for this kind of information. But in this case, it has decided that Congress's need for information about what happened outweighs the Justice Department's need for confidentiality. And President Biden has chosen not to assert executive privilege over any of this. Presidents sometimes do claim executive privilege over what happened in past White Houses for institutional reasons, but not this time. So the Justice Department has notified former Justice Department officials that they should respond to the congressional demands for documents and their testimony. Shep?
Pete, thanks. The ex-president's tax returns must be turned over to Congress. That was the ruling today from the Department of Justice. The Treasury Department has the returns, and Congress has been trying to get them for 2 years now. In 2019, the Bill Barr Justice Department agreed with the Trump administration that Congress lacked a legitimate legislative purpose and was just trying to embarrass the then president. Today's opinion from the Office of Legal Counsel says that finding went astray and was wrong on the facts. There are still questions about whether the former president will fight that decision. Under the rules, his team gets 72 hours to make moves before the tax returns go to the House Ways and Means Committee. We reported at the top of this news hour that the CDC director said in the last hour on Fox News Channel that the Biden administration is looking at federally mandating COVID vaccines, which directly contradicted the White House statement today that it was not considering that move. Dr. Walensky has just clarified that comment. In a tweet reply to CNBC healthcare reporter Berkeley Lovelace, she wrote, "There will be no nationwide mandate. I was referring to mandates by private institutions and portions of the federal government. There will be no federal mandate." Well, they risked their lives to help the United States military in Afghanistan, and now they're safe on American soil. The very first evacuation flight from Kabul, carrying more than 200 translators, interpreters, drivers, and other Afghans who worked with the United States and NATO during the war, they all just landed at Dulles Airport earlier today. Buses brought them to the Army base at Fort Lee in Virginia. They're the first round of Afghan evacuees as U.S. troops withdraw from Afghanistan and the Taliban hunts down our allies. Matt Zeller now, Truman Project National Security Fellow, advised troops on the ground in Afghanistan. Matt, thank you. This just the first group to make it out. There are so many others. Is the U.S. doing enough to get them out of there?
No. This one plane, which is a great start, you know, let's celebrate it where it is. Even a month ago, this was not something that we thought was going to come to fruition. But that one plane represents 0.3% of all of the people that we've gotten out so far. There are 99.7% of the people remaining, and that's about 88,000 people, according to the government report that was just released earlier this week about how many applicants are still in the system. We only have a plan to evacuate people who can get to Kabul. Half of the population that we know that needs evacuation are outside of Kabul. The Taliban control the roads between the cities, and there simply aren't enough flights in between the cities to move them all back and forth. And the Afghan military can't do it. They're losing the country actively to the Taliban. So it's come down to this. Either the president of the United States has to take bold action and send our military back into Afghanistan. We need to retake airfields that we held mere weeks ago so that we can save these people, or we're going to have to accept the fact that they're going to be dead in a couple of weeks, and those deaths are going to be gruesome.
The United States of America cannot do that. I mean, think of the message that sends to the rest of the world. You help the United States, they leave you there, and you get murdered. I mean, something has to happen.
That's exactly what I fear. You know, we could save American lives tomorrow by saving Afghan lives today. That's really what this is all, you know, if you want to get self-interested. But again, there is a moral obligation here. And we have, we made these people a promise. But if we want to think about our own self-worth and our self-interest, how are people going to trust us going downrange? And it's not just going to be military people. What about our diplomats and aid workers and Peace Corps volunteers? This is going to be something that will haunt us forever. But we can stop it. We can save these people. They aren't dead yet. That's what's so frustrating. I have yet to hear a plan on how we do that.
Is there any evidence that the Afghan military could help?
No, they're actively losing the country. You know, their only advantage at this point is their air force, and it's completely being used to just try and bomb back the Taliban. They just launched a massive operation mere hours ago to try to prevent the city of Herat from falling. The reality is that, you know, their commando units on the ground are being slaughtered en masse. The regular conventional army is, if they're not being killed, are surrendering and changing sides. The Taliban are now estimated to control maybe up to 85% of the country. And I've heard, you know, that there's an estimate within the U.S. government that Kabul may fall within months.
And when we go back in there, because we will, who's going to help us? There won't be anybody left. Matt Zeller, thanks so much for pushing it forward. After an extension and more hope for more help, the deadline's here now. Millions of people in danger of losing their homes across America. Will Congress step in for a last-minute Hail Mary? And a first for the Olympic Games as the countries put their best men and women in the pool to compete together. The CDC's ban on evictions during the pandemic ends tomorrow. In a last-ditch effort, House Democrats tried but failed to extend it this evening. Then they went home for summer recess. Now millions of struggling Americans are living in fear of getting kicked out of their homes in the days and weeks to come. Tonight, President Biden is calling for all states and local governments to immediately disperse the billions of dollars in COVID relief money that was meant to help those renters and landlords. So far, but a tiny fraction of that funding has actually been used. Here's NBC's Vaughn Hilliard.
Now the question is, what happens to these families here? Well, there's a great many of them that are waiting to hear back on federal funds that were actually set aside as part of relief packages from earlier this year. But very little of those federal funds have actually made it into the hands of renters and their landlords.
You were waiting for the paperwork to go through. You said you turned in your documentation?
I turned in all my documents, yes.
And what have you heard?
At this moment, I haven't heard anything.
Do you even feel like you understand the system?
I don't. It's so confusing.
Just 5.5% of the $522 million that was set aside for Georgia renters has actually gone to Georgia renters and landlords to prevent eviction here in this exact circumstance. And that is where those who have called on the moratorium to be extended say, look, these folks need protections. In the heart of this pandemic, these are tough circumstances here in these days ahead for these millions of families. Shep?
Vaughn, thanks. It's the nightmare before Christmas. Toy makers reporting supply chain issues that could mean some toys might not make it for the holidays, and those that do will likely be more expensive. Mattel and Hasbro both report price increases are coming this year because of higher production and shipping costs. Experts predict some toys might cost up to 25% more, especially new ones. 11 years ago, Prince recorded an album. Today, we're finally hearing it. Mark Zuckerberg wants to take you to the metaverse. We'll provide the roadmap next. The newest buzzword in Silicon Valley right now is metaverse. The idea is an entirely digital online universe. And you've probably already stepped into it without even realizing. If you played a game like Farmville or Animal Crossing, you create an avatar, then get to work harvesting crops or collecting bells. Or on a larger scale, video games like Roblox or Fortnite, where you create your own world. Even attend a concert. Fortnite reports 12 million people watched a live event featuring rapper Travis Scott this year. One of the highest profile examples of a cross between online and real life events. So why is everyone talking about the metaverse now? Well, because Mark Zuckerberg plans to announce plans to turn Facebook into a metaverse company, the ultimate metaverse. Think Ready Player One or The Matrix. You strap on a virtual reality headset and enter an online world where you can do everything from socialize to work and shop. It's the next phase of the internet, and of course, Facebook sells ads throughout and gets a cut of all transactions. Kara Swisher now, New York Times contributing opinion writer, CNBC contributor. Kara, how big an impact could a behemoth like Facebook make with their own metaverse?
Well, if it existed, they could, but it doesn't. obviously, I don't know. Buzzword is an excellent word to use if you want to talk about this. I think one of the issues is that they can just say things, and Mark's trying to get focus off of other things, including regulatory issues. And so I think one of the issues is that it has to exist, and they're trying to do so through Oculus or some of their other things that they own, but it's in its very early stages. So it's just a buzzword at this moment.
And a distraction from, well, everybody knows. So do companies like Facebook plan to actually make money from this metaverse?
Well, you could presumably. It already happens when you're on, as you mentioned, all these other games. The issue is that you take, you know, the Internet of Things, how people talked about that. You kind of have that now. You have nests or you have refrigerators that talk to you. So it's sort of bringing the you bring the physical and the digital together, which has been happening for a long time. And this is that it plunges you into it, that you have a digital persona. You know, eventually, sure, you're going to have Oculus or whatever the different headsets are. Apple's working on one. But in general, you know, they're sort of staking their claim to it because they don't have a phone and they failed in the phone business. And so why don't they just say this? And it's an interesting concept. No question. It just doesn't exist way.
And you wonder if it might backfire on Zuck, too.
You know, he could build it maybe. I'd see someone more like Apple or Amazon would have a better, you know, the idea of commerce or things like that. They have better skills and better devices to do this. Facebook has been pretty bad on devices. I think Amazon has come from behind. They've had some bad devices and good devices. But you see someone more like Microsoft or Apple being a big player in this area where they can offer all kinds of things, or anyone in the gaming business. Because that's where it starts. But then it can be tourism. You could go on, a lot of this stuff. Remember when they had 3D televisions? That didn't quite work out.
No.
That didn't work out at all. So, it's a great idea. It's a great concept. It's and it will someday, you will be putting on some sort of helmet. But the stuff now is not good enough. Not today. No, not
Kara, great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
A new Prince album released today, more than 5 years after the iconic musician's death. He recorded Welcome to America more than a decade ago, but many of its themes speak to what's happening now. The song clip you just heard talking about a wilderness of lies in a digital world. The album addresses disinformation, racism, and social justice. Prince mysteriously shelved the album back in 2010. This is the first time his estate has put out a project featuring entirely unreleased material since he died. CNBC's David Faber hosting 5 episodes of Jeopardy next week. The Squawk on the Street anchor, no stranger to the quiz show. Like many of the other guest hosts, Faber is a former contestant. In 2012, he won $50,000 for charity, beating out basketball legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. This morning, he told Squawk on the Street co-anchors hosting was harder. You can catch David's appearance all next week on Jeopardy. Well, if you want to meet the best swimmers in all the world right now, you got to go to Tokyo. But during the pandemic, one family didn't have to leave their backyard. Their reaction when Katie Ledecky asked to take a dip. And gymnast Suni Lee bringing some gold to her home state of Minnesota. What the governor there did in return. Tokyo 2020, and we're minutes away from NBC Sports primetime Olympics coverage here on CNBC. Tonight, a lot of action in women's volleyball. First, we go to the beach. Team USA, a combined 5-0 and looking to finish the group stage undefeated. Then, the hardwood. U.S. aiming to spike the Russian Olympic Committee. Later, women's team saber semifinals. And a gold medal set to be awarded at the men's trampoline final. Blaine Wilson's here, 3-time Olympic gymnast who won silver medal in Athens for Team USA. Now a gymnastics coach. Blaine, it's great to see you. You know, we're a week into this thing. How's the U.S. done?
You know what? I think they've done well. It's been very positive on both the men's side, which is a younger side, And the women did great. You know what? Despite all the stuff that happened, those girls went out there. They won a silver medal. Yeah. I mean, it was fantastic to watch.
It sure was. So, a lot of pressure on athletes has been in the spotlight since Simone Biles decided to pull out, or of several events anyway. You've competed on the biggest stages on the whole world. Do gymnasts have unique challenges when it comes to that pressure?
Well, I mean, you know what? All these outside influences that come in is basically it's what you decide to put on yourself. I'll make this very short, sweet. I had a similar situation in 2000. I put too much pressure on myself, and I let the media get to be a part of that.
How'd that affect you?
I had a terrible Olympic Games, but my team did not let me quit. They were like, hey, you know what? We need you to stay in here. We need you to, you know, keep it moving. And, it helps to have good people behind you, especially coaches and your teammates, though.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, I read one piece of advice that you had for Simone is to just turn it all off, like you just said. That's not easy.
Get rid of it. It doesn't help. It really doesn't. And yeah, the more you talk about yourself doing stuff, the more you're going to think about, well, I have to do that. I absolutely have to do it. Choose to shut it down and let your actions speak louder than your words.
Yeah, a lot of us have done that. You know, men's trampoline gymnastics final right here on CBC tonight. Who will you be watching in that, Blaine?
I have a TNT program at my gym, and they've been talking about Ivan Litvanovich, Belarus, and maybe Zhao Li from China. So I don't know. We'll see. Trampoline is crazy to me because I'm artistic. It's just, it's insane.
It's like they defy gravity. You watch it. A lot of us had trampolines in our backyard, but holy crap, never anything like that.
No way.
All right, man. You staying up late watching?
I have been. My wife is a former Olympian, so it's been nonstop DVR'd all over the place. So,
Blaine, it's great to see you. Thanks for all the memories, and thanks for being here tonight. Good luck. Katie Ledecky, she's looking to add another gold medal to her resume. Lucky number 7 if she wins the women's 800-meter free tonight. Ledecky's a heavy favorite, so no surprise if she tops the medal podium. But what may surprise you is where she trained for these summer games. Some local reporting now from NBC Bay Area's Ian Cole.
When the pandemic shut down pools across the country and Olympic training came to a halt, Todd Speaker says his neighbor in Atherton, a former Stanford swimming coach, gave him a call.
He said, Todd, we'd like to know if we could use your pool, base in essence. And I said, who is it? And they said, Katie Ledecky, Simone Manuel. I said, just have him get a hold of me, which he did. And I said, have at it.
Ledecky and Manuel, Stanford and Olympic swimmers, took him up on the offer, training in his backyard for 3 months with their coach.
We were hearing stories about people training rivers, and it was horrible. So this has filled the bill.
Speaker was an All-American swimmer at UCLA, where the Aquatic Center is named after him. So his 25-yard pool is built for the real thing, with special gutters and timers.
Basically, these are two competition lanes.
Well, he was mostly gone during the training. His daughter and grandkids were over often, bonding with the two women.
Having them here was such an honor. It was so fascinating watching them and seeing how fast they are in real life.
When Katie Ledecky won gold in the 1500, it's a special feeling knowing they played a role in helping Team USA.
But it sure adds a huge extra set of interest levels when you knew they trained right here in a small little backyard pool.
For the news, I'm Ian Cole.
Well, a newly minted holiday in the state of Minnesota. Today is Sunisa Lee Day. The governor made that proclamation after the gymnast from the St. Paul area clenched the all-around gold medal. Lee has won hearts all over when she told today's Hoda Kotb the story of how her father built her a wooden balance beam because the family couldn't afford a real one.
That beam is like, I don't know, like I grew up going on that beam. If I wasn't in the gym, I was always outside on the beam doing extra things because I didn't want to get behind or I always wanted to get better. So it was something that we kind of like cherished, because whenever I was bored, I would just go outside and he would watch me and try and coach me, even though he didn't know what he was talking about.
Oh, man. Well, she says her gold medal still feels like a dream come true. What's next for the 18-year-old? College. She plans to attend Auburn University on a gymnastics scholarship. Well, for the first time, men and women will swim together at the Olympics in the same race. The 4x100-meter mixed medley makes its debut tonight. Each country picks two men and two women to swim the backstroke, breaststroke, butterfly, and freestyle. The teams get to pick who swims each. So we could end up seeing a man and a woman both doing the backstroke at the same time. Team USA's lineup is still a bit of a mystery, but gold medalists Caleb Dressel and Lydia Jacoby are in play. And for the fans in Japan, no cheering for your team. But you can clap. It's all part of COVID safety measures, of course. Fans were told, yeah, you can get together and watch the men's volleyball match against Poland as long as you follow the rules. No eating, no drinking, no taking off your mask, and no cheering. A strange and silent watch party ensued. Good vibes only. Unfortunately for the Japanese, the home team lost. Well, if you're just tuning in for beach volleyball or women's BMX freestyle, hope you'll be with us right here tomorrow. Tomorrow's Saturday. How about Monday for the news? Weeknight, 7 Eastern on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course. Get the limited-time offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.